Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Rebel Room post-game edition. Ryan Green and Rob Mish. And boy, it feels like 2008 again. UNLV leads late, doesn't win. Plain and simple.
Yeah, tough game. A lot to be positive about, though. Some breakdowns, though, at the end, and one big one. Boy, how costly was that?
Yeah, we will get to everything that was tonight's UNLV's 23-21 loss at the hands of number 24 Oregon State out at Sam Boyd Stadium. And the big one, let's just get 23-21, excuse me. Let's just get right to it. Deontay Purvis called for a pass interference on 3rd and 26 after UNLV clawed back thanks to two touchdown drives led by backup quarterback Mike Clausen. We'll get to why he was in a minute. But UNLV goes up 21-20 with about 4 minutes left. The drive, UNLV's defense feeds off the momentum. Jason Beauchamp gets a tackle for loss, then a five-yard penalty, then a sack by Beauchamp, 3rd and 26 from their own 15. Sean Canfield gets drilled by Terrence Lee on a blindside blitz. The ball flutters into the middle of nowhere, and a flag comes out. Deontay Purvis called for pass interference, excuse me. Keeps the drive going, five completions later. 7 seconds left on the clock, 33-yard field goal. Boom, done, see you later.
That was arguably the best defense UNLV had played all night, especially considering how dangerous it was and how important it was for them to play defense. And Oregon State was coming apart at the seams.
Yeah.
Yet, for the third time, they had a illegal substitution, mm-hmm. Twice on defense, this time on offense, and they were just – they weren't on the same page.
They were frazzled.
Beauchamp was in, had some energy, had a sack. Everything was going so well, and then that wounded duck gets floated up there. I got to be honest, I had my binoculars on, and I was watching that whole series. I was watching UNLV's penetration at the line, and it was really impressive. And that was so close to a sack, too. Canfield just got that ball off, and, of course, that's why it was a flutter, and it looked like it was a jump ball.
Yeah, and, you know, the ball kind of fluttered and just fell into a big patch of green, and you know, the coaches were calling to try to say it was tipped, but it obviously wasn't. And then they were trying to plead that it was uncatchable to no avail. Either way, the drive keeps going. And, boy, you know, talk about the energy UNLV's defense had at that point, too. Remember, that stand came on the heels of stuffing Oregon State at midfield on first a 3rd and 1 and then a 4th and inches.
That's right.
And that led to the touchdown pass from Mike Clausen to Phillip Payne in the right edge of the end zone that put him ahead.
Very questionable going for that 4th down call, because if you don't get it, I mean, you got UNLV has half the field to go. So I thought for sure Mike Riley, the Oregon State coach, was going to punt it to try to pin UNLV back. Of course, they didn't. They didn't get it, and what happened. But it was a night filled with a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, and, you know, it's unfair to peg this one squarely on the shoulders of Deontay Purvis, who, you know, he did have a rough night. But, boy, UNLV was making mistakes left and right. And, you know, let's go back and talk about a sloppy first half where three drives get stopped prematurely. First, Omar Clayton with an interception at midfield. Very uncharacteristic, a guy who only threw 5 of them all last season. Then you have Channing Trotter getting stuffed on a 4th and 1 attempt in Oregon State territory. And then you have Rodelyn Anthony on a drive that's in Oregon State territory, catches a pass over the middle on 3rd down, gets the in an attempt to get 1st down yardage, tries to hurdle 3 defenders, and the ball pops out in midair, Oregon State ball.
Boy, we could talk a lot about each one of those 3 plays, but in the spirit of being concise,
yeah.
You know, that interception, at that moment I was kind of just watching the field, not one thing or one play in particular, and the one guy who moved on that ball was the D-back who intercepted it.
Yeah, Lance Mitchell.
He was the one guy who showed the most intensity and desire to get the ball.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't any other action as far as a UNLV guy maybe even trying to get a hand on it or bat it away, because it looked imminent, mm-hmm. the danger that was going to happen. That, so
the ball was thrown a little late. It was thrown a little soft. And, yeah, he jumped the route beautifully. We could see it coming the second that ball got
it. It almost looked like he went to the ball before it left Omar's hand.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was reading his eyes, and there was no question about it. And, you know, for much of this game, Oregon State appeared one step ahead of UNLV. Because let's talk about what Oregon State was doing on the offensive side of the ball for much of the night.
Boy.
You know, we knew coming into this game that focus on the Rogers brothers was going to be key. And Mike Sanford knew they weren't going to try to stop him, but to use the cliche, said you got to try to contain him. And Well, if giving up 295 total yards of offense on 46 touches and two touchdowns is containing him, then yeah.
Well, you know, the Rodgers brothers had 323 total combined yards.
Yeah.
All-purpose, you know. 323 yards to a couple brothers. Man, that's incredible. And in the first half, they only had 88. So, Jaquizz, that's how you say it, yeah. Jaquizz. Rodgers said at the halftime they wanted to devise some plays, stretch out UNLV a bit and try to pop them with some big plays. And that's what they did right from the get-go.
45-yarder on the first play.
In the second half, the kick went out of bounds, giving Oregon State great field position at their 40. Boom, there's a 45-yarder. And Jaquizz really had a good spin move away from Travis Dixon. Mm-hmm. That was really sweet. That popped him free. But boy, those brothers are something special. It was really interesting talking with them afterwards because they insist. James is a junior. Jaquizz is a sophomore. Both of them insist that the younger did not follow the older. It just happened that that was the best situation for both. And to talk to them, you would think it is just mere coincidence that they're both playing at the same college.
Yeah.
It's really stunning. But they were really dynamic, and you know what? Oregon State improved to 7-0 in games in which both brothers score a touchdown. So, you know, they got it rolling.
Yeah, they definitely do. And while you say the 7-0, you know, Oregon State coming in was 0-7 in road non-conference games under the current stint under Mike Riley, dating back to 2003. And this was the first time they'd won one away from Corvallis in the non-conference schedule under Riley in his current his current run there. You know, boy, let's shift focus talking about UNLV now, where they go from here, because, you know, the theme of this is, you know, a lot of people up in the press box are saying, here you go again, you know, because this is a team that let several games get away from them in the fourth quarter last year. You could talk about losing to BYU in the closing minute. Leading at Colorado State with 2 minutes left to play, losing a fourth quarter lead to Air Force, three games right there off the top of my head that got away in the fourth quarter, and you got to wonder, is this a different UNLV team in 2009 than 2008 to where they're not going to let it snowball?
Beating Arizona State at the very end, beating Iowa State at the very end. I think we've it's continuing.
Nothing came comfortable for this team.
No, the pattern has continued. This is just a cliff-hanging, nail-biting team. And you better just hang on to your seat because it's the pattern is developing again. And you know what? It's entertaining for what that's worth. I know some fans will probably want to, I don't know what they want to do, but it's definitely you don't know what this team's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, on your gut instinct, let's talk gut instinct here. What do we think this team's going to? Because you know, we were kind of saying after the game, you might learn more than you're going to learn about this team at any point in the year by what you see in the first half next Saturday against Hawaii when the Warriors come to town, 8 p.m., what do you expect to see next Saturday? Do you expect to see a team that's lagging and still holding on to this one, or do you expect to see a team that moved on from it?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna defer to you a little bit because you know the team so well and you're living and dying with them every day and practice and seeing and hearing what they say and what they do and all that. You pegged it during practice this past week. How this team was maybe talking maybe a little too full of itself, talking about the success against Arizona State last mm-hmm. season, another Pac-10 team, this time in their house. Hey, they know how to play. They know how to beat a Pac-10 team. You caught a sense of a little too much entitlement.
Yeah, and you know, it was even there, you know, after the game, the players were saying, well, you know, they without saying it, they were almost saying, you know, they didn't really win it. We lost it. And I guess you could say that. But at the same time, UNLV had plenty of mistakes that led to that game being so close at the end. So it kind of goes hand in hand. I think judging on how these guys sound Monday and Tuesday is when you're really going to be able to tell. Do they still have that, you know, air of almost overconfidence? You know, if they do, I think that's actually a good sign for them going into next week. Because, you know, this is... the atmosphere is not going to be to blame. You know, last year UNLV loses to that game to Reno, and the fans never really came back.
Yeah.
You know, tonight it was as Mike Sanford put it, it was an electric atmosphere there tonight. That was probably the craziest I'd seen the home crowd when they stuffed them on 4th-and-1 that I've seen them probably since the Iowa State game last year.
Yeah.
it's going to be like that the next three home games, even though a lot of those fans are going to be for the opposing team. You're going to have Hawaii coming here, always a crazy atmosphere. Then you're going to have BYU, and then you're going to have Utah. So I think the energy is definitely going to be in the stadium, but is UNLV going to be providing any to reciprocate? I think we'll know more here early in the week.
They need to do that before, 10 minutes are left on the clock.
Yeah.
Because they had so swung momentum in their favor and had the crowd so much on their side. They stop them on fourth down. They take that drive and they score. And then they continue the defensive prowess. They were slamming Oregon State. They were way up against the wall. And to have it fall apart like that could really be disheartening for the fans. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the players react and what they talk about this week and what fans show up.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that could really be disheartening. And we saw tonight that Hawaii, people were talking about them having a down year, but they're no slouches, They went to a Pac-10 team today. Granted, Washington State is way down. And really thumped them. So, Hawaii's got some firepower, and that's got to get the Rebels' attention.
And traditionally not a team that plays well on the mainland, but that certainly didn't look like it affected them today at all.
Right, and everybody knows what kind of crowd's going to be here next Saturday. It's going to be 50-50, maybe a packed crowd, maybe 30,000, and it's going to be rambunctious and rabid. And we'll just have to see what happens because I think it's going to be a really crazy atmosphere, crazier than tonight.
And, let's talk about a couple positives before getting out of here. I think one positive for UNLV is that they were able to make this a game because, boy, I'll tell you, midway through that third quarter when Oregon State makes it 20-7, answering UNLV's first score by scoring in about 2 minutes, we're thinking, wow, UNLV's just got very vanilla play calling. They're not looking aggressive. They don't look like they have a lot of energy on either side of the ball. And out of nowhere, they just, boom, are right back in it. I think that maybe says something looking at this team for next week that, they didn't throw the towel in tonight. I guess that says something.
Well, you know what? I think we need to talk about, what's going on at quarterback because Omar Clayton's a bit hobbled. And we saw Mike Clawson go in there and throw a beautiful ball to last year's star, Philip Payne. That's going to do wonders, I think, for Philip Payne.
Yeah.
He's back in the fold, and he is the quick strike guy who can jolt an opponent. And so I bet we're going to see a big game from him next week. But what's going to happen with the QB situation?
Well, Omar Clayton, it's diagnosed right now as a sprained knee, as it usually is at this point. The team doctors kind of said they don't really see anything that leads them to believe it's more than that right now. It happened on a hit from behind that he took where he went down, got up. He was hobbled for a couple plays, couldn't really run around. He even tried to scramble once and just really fell forward because he couldn't do much. He said, my knee was stiff. I couldn't run at full speed. At that point, I had to make a decision as far as what's best for the team. And at that point, what was best was to bring Mike Clawson in. And, Sanford's been giving Clawson a series pretty much every series or two every game to kind of keep him ready for that situation. I mean, look at the past. Last year against BYU, Clawson has to come in when Clayton gets hurt. After the TCU game where Omar tears his MCL, Clawson comes in and starts the last three games. They're trying to keep him fresh, and obviously, he looks like a dependable backup, but it's still Omar's show if he's ready to
right.
go. No question about it.
And probably the best thing that could happen is Roddle and Anthony has got to think he's not Ronaldo Nehemiah.
Oh, my goodness.
We can talk about all kinds of plays in this game as any football game, mistakes and penalties and boneheaded maneuvers. But if there's no fumble there, and if UNLV takes that drive in and scores as it looked like they were doing, that's a different. There's a different complexion about mm-hmm. that game. So if they can not nullify or limit, they have got to. There can be no silly mistakes.
Yep.
Because we didn't see Oregon State make many silly mistakes there.
And that's what's helped UNLV improve so much over the past year and a half is limiting mistakes. They don't turn it over very much. When you see them do it, it kind of makes you turn your head, and they did it a lot tonight.
And it would be one thing if Anthony saw a 5-5 cornerback out there that he was going to vault and maybe get 4 or 5 extra yards.
There were three guys.
Yeah, so that was really questionable, and boy, they're going to see that again in tape, and they're going to cringe.
Mm-hmm. And there's plenty they're going to cringe about looking at tape, but it all is going to depend on how they react starting tomorrow in practice. I think that's going to really tell us all we need to know about what this team's going to look like next week. And, of course, we will be back here in the Rebel Room to talk about that with you as the week progresses and as we see the team out at practice, see what they're looking like, body language, how they're talking, all that stuff. We'll be back here with you
in the injury updates, yep.
Everything. So any final comments before we get out of here?
Ooh, wow, that's a lot to digest for the last game to start in the entire country. So
yeah.
I think that as far as predictions looking the next week, kind of a early look, I'm going to say 35-31 UNLV.
I think that's pretty fair. I'll go along with that for now. And, yeah, you know, I think a lot of it depends on, I wonder what Hawaii's going to do. Are they going to travel back to the islands and travel back here? Are they going to stay in the mainland for the week?
Yeah.
A lot to digest this week. And, of course, stay here. Stay tuned here to LasVegasSun.com/Rebels for all of it as it progresses. For Rob Mish, I'm Ryan Green. We'll talk to you in the middle of the week. Bye-bye.